Welcome back to another Casualty Friday, your home for all of your horror talk, the latest in COVID-safe conventions and horror flicks from Felissa Rose, all of your mass killer conversation and the latest in horror fashion from Kane Hodder. And I'm Tiffany Shepis, making sure this podcast doesn't completely fall apart. But today we have one hell of a guest who has worked with some of the absolute best in the business. And she's also worked with all three of us, which means it's been a
complete
roller coaster of a career. And she has been in some of the most influential movies of our lifetime. And I really mean that, of our lifetime, a badass, a mom, a writer, an actress, and the mother of E.T., Ms. D. Wallace. Thank you for being here.
We're all together again. Yay.
One more time. How are you?
I'm great. I just got my first COVID shot today.
Wow.
So I'm really happy and I'm really excited. And I had absolutely nothing from it at all.
Of course.
I mean, not even what I usually get with the flu shot. So.
Well, it's science, man. And you are a pioneer. I love it. Hopefully next we can all get ours.
And D, was that through UCLA Health?
Yes, it was UCLA, and it's so hard to get an appointment, guys. You know, I'm going to write in and say, why doesn't somebody set up a queue so that everybody can list their name in a queue, and as soon as it opens up, they take people in order instead of the... It's crazy how they're doing this.
It's really bad and it's really hard.
And you have to do another one in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, but they automatically made me an appointment for that.
Right, right.
Once you get the first one.
So I was able to go online at like 5 a.m. when they opened it up for my mom and went through everyone and finally found a spot in Hanson Dam area. And I was like, all right, no problem. I'll take her 7 a.m. And then since she's gearing up to have a surgery, I called her doctors like, you know, just making sure like this is the right thing to do, right? And they're like, no, because she'll be in the hospital when it's time for her second dose and the hospitals don't have it. And I'm like, how can our hospitals not have vaccines available? And they said, this is not how it is right now.
None of the doctor's offices. I just talked to my doctor that I've been with for 40 years. It took him 7 hours to get an appointment. And he is part of UCLA. I mean, it's crazy to me how they've set it up. But hopefully now, things will start becoming a little bit more in focus.
I mean, in fairness.
We're out of focus, could they?
No. But in fairness, I mean, we really need to inoculate D before the rest of the world can get their vaccine, because now it can trickle down to the rest of the world, to all of us. But all right, so you know, I mean, we're all friends in real life, but we were so excited when you said you would come on our show, because not just are we all friends, but like we are huge fans. And
oh, stop it, you guys.
It's
you
true
know that
it's
oh,
true.
Oh my god.
It is true.
I look at you as my sister and brother, you know.
The truth is, it's like we've all been on movies together, and when people hear your name, you get excited. Like, all right, this is going to be really cool. And so for that, I mean, we have a lot of things to talk about in a short amount of time.
Okay.
Number one thing that you feel like, oh man, everyone's going to ask this, and they're going to ask it again, and everyone's heard the story, but it's not true. I want to know about your first movie.
My very first movie was The Stepford Wives. I played the German maid. I had one line, which was, yeah.
Yes.
And I got it because I was in New York and I was running out of money. So I was sitting there waiting to be interviewed for this receptionist position. And the director walked out and he walked by and he kept looking at me. He came over and he said, are you an actor? I said, I am. He said, you want to be in a movie? I said, I do. So I spent 3 days watching Tina Louise and all of them. Boy, was that an education.
Wow.
Watching those three actresses.
Wow.
You could not have gotten three more different actors on a set to work together. You know, Tina always would come out with her little umbrella and never without full makeup. And it was just crazy, but it was a good, really good learning experience for me. And then I came out to, you know, California, did some, day player things and moved my way on up to guest stars. And then I booked a religious film from my acting studio, where we had a night where everybody, all the casting directors came in, and it was called All the King's Horses. And I starred in it with Grant Goodeve. Do you remember Grant?
Sure.
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was all about, it was a Christian film. And it was all about this woman who was being beaten by her alcoholic husband, and what God had to say about her staying with him anyway. Now, you know, I come from, my dad was a severe alcoholic. So this was a part I knew well. It was really close to my heart. I never saw my dad hit my mom, but verbally every night, you know. So, and then we were kind of off and running. You know, everybody told me, I said, I'm going to invite agents to a screening room to see this film because I'm really proud of my work in it. And every single person said to me, you can't invite agents to watch a religious film. They'll laugh you out of the, do you know, I invited 10 really good medium to higher stream agents, and 9 of them wanted to sign me.
Whoa.
So
listen to that.
Yeah. For every actor out there that's second guessing, you know, your work speaks for itself. And if your work is good, show it.
Wow.
Why do we have these rules? We have these like ideas that we can't do something like that. I love that you've always been someone at the forefront who's, you know, ready to stand up, and you're so authentic and so genuine and so honest. And that's why I love you so deeply, because it's, you know, thank you for doing what you do.
Well, thanks, Melissa. I just said, you know, and this is literate. Can I swear on this show?
Yes.
Yes. No. Oh, good. So I literally said, you know, if they can't fucking see what I do as an actor, I don't want him to rep me anyway.
Yeah.
Good point.
And it just ended up being a great, great marriage, my first agent and I.
Wow. So you really chose cool. one of them and you went on to work with them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you guys think, just for the aspiring little D out there watching this, do you think gone are the days that you can get an agent to come to a screening anymore? Gone are the days when you sit in a room and somebody's gonna say, hey, are you an actor? Like,
I believe that what you believe is what's possible for you.
God damn it. You know, and all of your inspiring stuff makes me feel so
bad. Yeah, but that's Einstein. You know, and I just watched, oh, damn, what was the name of that? It's a new children's movie, but it's really not.
Soul.
No, it's not Soul. It's it's just magical. The costumes and everything, magical in it. And the little girl is taking her cohort in. And he says, we're never going to make it. We're never going to make it. And she turns around and says, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And that's a direct quote from Einstein.
Wow.
That's amazing. And,
you know, that name, Tiffany knows this, but I tend to, at times, correct people's grammar. And there's an old... there's an old joke about that old saying, I before E, except after C.
Yeah.
Einstein got it wrong twice in his own name. That's very clever.
And D, just so you know, there's a time, which is pretty much every show, that we talk about replacing Kane on Casualty Friday. So if free at all, or anyone really, if there's like a gardener that works at your house.
Sure, I'll jump in. Yeah, like I can, anybody could take Kane's place.
End Kane.
Oh my. Wow. All right, see you guys.
You are one of a kind, you know that.
Speaking of one of a kind movies, The Hills Have Eyes. Yeah. Was that your first genre film?
Yeah, it was my first film after the religious film, which kind of sums up the dichotomy of D. You know, I spend half my life doing horror films and the other half of my life healing people from fear. Go figure, it works for me. But yeah, I used the film that I had from All the King's Horses and showed it and they liked it. And I had done some TV work since then too. And auditioned, and Susan Lanier, of course, was the star of that film at the time. A lot of the rest of us weren't known, really. But I, you know, started out playing the mom.
But did you,
the only mom in the movie.
Did you know it was going to be successful, or was it like a lot of these films that people are just like, all right, it's just going to be a little horror movie that's going to be swept under
the rug? You know, really, guys, do we ever know?
No.
Really, do we?
No. We hope.
So many things have to come together, but the film and the editing and the music and the editing and the release date. And then is the public ready for that film and ready for that story? And
there's timing.
So many things that have to come together. I mean, I get that question about E.T. all the time. No. E.T. was supposed to be Steven's little film.
Wow.
Low budget, little film.
Wow.
Low budget.
What? Did he express that?
The whole budget was just a little over $1 million.
Wow.
And that's were you true? Told, like the cast was told, this is a smaller film, not just
no,
due to budget.
No, we weren't told that. We just knew it.
You know, feel the magic.
You know, word gets around on this set pretty fast, guys. You know that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, just even with the producing that I do, you know, I've walked onto sets where the budget is minuscule, like almost nothing, and I feel the magic on the set.
Yeah.
And I know you feel that too, because Absolutely. Of how intuitive and heartfelt and, you know, profound you are. When you go to a set, you must know with E.T., something incredibly special is happening right now.
Well, I knew that from reading the script. The script that Melissa Matheson wrote.
Beautiful.
And they wanted me to accept the film without reading the script. I said, I'm not going to do it. And my agent said, D, it's Steven Spielberg. I said, exactly. And if I don't know that I can serve this script in the best way I can, why the hell would I go do this for Steven Spielberg and let him down? So they made me drive over to the studio, and behind locked doors, I read what was then called A Boy's Life. And I called my agent on a rotary phone and I said, you know, I'm not sure this is going to do anything for me, but I think it's going to do a lot for the world. And I want to be a part of this film.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, you just knew it from reading the script. You know, there's something magical about that story that just kind of reaches into your heart and goes, yep, you're coming with me.
I feel like that's with all of Spielberg's stuff. I mean, in a way, I mean, that's how you know it's a Spielberg film. It's like, there's just something magical about what he does.
I would agree with that statement about his earlier films.
Yeah, I mean, just the
films, not so much
the actors that he picked. I mean, it's just every piece fits together perfectly.
Yeah,
what makes him a master.
He's brilliant at casting the right person with the right emotional life for that particular part.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. I mean, and then you've written a book on the people you've worked with. I know that you write other stuff, but like on. I mean, Cujo.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Bright Light, which is really kind of my autobiography so far. And, but it's told through all the movies and the big directors that I've worked with, but it also has all my spiritual work and the lessons I learned.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the lessons you've learned were because of the career path you took, or do you think you would have learned them either way? Is it a bit of both?
I think I was destined to learn what I know about the creation process. Hmm. And, you know, even when I was a little girl, I would channel stuff. Of course, every kid does, guys. You know, we call them their imaginary friends. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah. We excuse it so that we can accept it, but all kids channel, all people channel. All of us have had that experience of thinking of somebody and, oh God, I should call them. And 2 days later, they die or they call you or they need you. Something brings the two of you together. All of us have had that experience.
Literally 2 days ago, I was like, oh man, I need to call Danielle Harris. And a second later, she texted me. And I was like, Jesus Christ. She's like, dude, were you just thinking of me? And I'm like, yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that didn't surprise me at all.
Things like that all the time. Like years ago, I was writing a short film and I was thinking about a boy I knew when I was 15. And I was like, oh man, if I'm going to write him into this, I should probably call him or send him a Facebook message because I hadn't talked to him in years. The very next morning, I found out he passed away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just, but I hadn't thought about this person in years. Like, years and years and years.
But that's all the information is just hanging out right above our heads.
And you also have to be open to all the
signs. You have to ask for it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy.
The most beautiful part of life, you know, if you just open yourself up and you laugh and really truly, I mean, you know how my belief system, I love seeing the signs that come in and the joy that just lives on this vibration. People are like, why are you so happy and positive? Well, I mean, certainly I think some of it is a choice. It starts to become
all a
muscle.
Choice. Yeah. People just think life happens and we have to react to it. You know, that thoughts just happen. And well, I just had that feeling. But no, the more you choose your thoughts and your feelings that are in alignment with what you want, the more you get what you want.
Yes.
It's really easy once you get it down, but you have to stay conscious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Gabrielle and I, dear Lord, you know how connected we are.
Oh.
We will literally be calling each other at the same moment. It's crazy.
I love Gabrielle so much. I just listen to her on Worst First. I do the treadmill in the morning and I listen to the whole thing. I'm like, you know, the thing I love most about Dee and Gabrielle is just you teach all of us through your complete candidness and openness. And I wanted to just send her a text, and I will, saying thank you so much, because you know how this industry is. A lot of people wear with a facade or put on a certain face.
Yeah.
I just love how open and real you are. And it teaches all of us, like, it's okay to speak your fails, your mistakes,
truth.
Your triumphs, your greatness.
You bet.
Thank you.
If we don't blow our horn, we're not giving anybody else permission to blow it.
Sure. But there's also been something about you, Dee, that always struck me, like, for all the years, like before I even knew you, and we'd be at conventions together and I was just starting out and I would watch you and you would talk about the positive things that you had done and talk about the things that you were proud of, but you never sounded like hey, everybody, look at me, like I'm this gloaty. You didn't sound like a dick, basically, you know, where I, on the other hand, would. And I was like, it's a real art to be able to kind of self-love and be proud of what you do and your accomplishments without seeming like I'm stepping on what you've done. Do you know what I mean? And
or braggadocious.
I would disagree with that about you, Tiffany. I've never seen that in you.
I just don't show you my true side.
I can't wait.
Yes.
I've seen it.
And I'm just going to I'm going to mute Kane Hodder again. So Cujo. When you got Cujo, first of all, Stephen King, please tell me everything about him.
I can't tell you much about Stephen other than he came to the set one day and very sweet, very shy, very quiet man. You know, he took a pass at the script, but I think he takes a pass at all of his books.
Sure.
Just as part of its contract. Cujo was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And the film I'm most proud of.
Academy Award.
It's not.
You know that.
Don't I wish? Don't I wish? They don't give those kind of film awards, you know?
What kind of prep
is it? Yeah, but your performance is one of the greatest performances, bar none, ever. It is. In that we've all watched it like, how, what? Oh.
You're terrifying, you're sweet, you're cool, you're badass. Like the prep for something like that is that obviously, like, do you read the book first and you make notes to say?
Well, see, that's the only way I got through that film. And I have to make a shout out to my mentor, Charles Conrad, who opened up a whole new world of acting for me. I had studied with Uta Hagen and Jeff Corey and a lot of people that came from breaking things down and looking for beats and all that. Charles came from the Meisner technique, but he made one all his own. And basically you get your energy to such a high place and then you throw all your energy toward the person or the monster or the scene that you're interacting with. And what that does is it literally bypasses your conscious mind. So you actually channel the character. And I would see people in class, it was unreal, guys, because we were never allowed to do a piece of material that we knew or that we'd ever seen. And one day I got up to start this scene and I started limping and Charles threw down his paper and he said, "Dee Wallace, you stop right there. You know you're not supposed to do any material that you've ever seen before. Why didn't you go get it?" I said, "Charles, I don't know what this is from. I've never seen it. I've never done it." And he went, "Then how do you know she's a cripple?" And I would see stuff like that every week in my acting studio. I mean, and then when I taught, I would see stuff like that every week. It was freedom for me not to have to wonder, am I making the wrong decision? Am I making the wrong choice, right? Because at any given time, and often in the scenes that I play with all this emotional stuff, there are five choices going on at the same time.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if I have permission to say the name of the show. I have a small arc on a really nice TV show and I just finished another episode of it. And as I was doing this quite emotional scene, something hit me that took me in a whole different way in the scene. And when I finished, I went, oh my God, where did that? And then I realized it was all about my son who had been killed. Whether my conscious mind would have ever put that together, I don't know. I don't break stuff down ever. Not anything you've ever seen me do. It's all been Charles' technique.
Wow.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. And when that show comes out, you have to tell us so we can see it. And now we know the secret.
Well, it'll be, I think it airs in a couple of weeks, but I haven't been given permission to. It'll be, I'll announce it on my social media.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was congratulations.
Great for me because I got to do, you know, on TV, a lot of times you don't get to do the really great emotional stuff that we love to do. But I did in this one, and was encouraged actually to use as much emotion as I could.
That's great. Well, I mean,
I feel so out of place at times in discussions like this because I've never had any acting training. And when people like you guys have all had training for your career, I never had that. And if I've said it before, if I've ever been able to learn anything about the craft of acting, it's watching quality actors perform. And you know, Tiffany will give me shit for this for sure, but I'm not almost never intimidated by anyone. And not because
I think we know that about you, King.
Huh?
I think we know that about you.
But you intimidate me, Dee, because of your knowledge and history and career. It's like I talked about doing a scene with Charlize Theron in Monster, and I did a dialogue scene with her in that movie. And the entire shoot, it was a small movie, like you're saying, E.T. was. Monster was a very small budget movie, but from the beginning, everybody on the crew was talking about she's going to win an Oscar for this. And I was like, ah, if anybody sees it, she's a serial killer, you know? Then most often those kind of films don't get the recognition. Yeah. Of course, I was wrong and you saw what happened, but it's just, at times I feel like I don't belong in the company of people that have been so trained in a career. I'll intimidate the hell out of you doing stunts, but
Yeah, but you know, Kane, and I think this is important for anybody that's listening. Some people are just born with naturally knowing what to do, you know? And some people build on that through training. You know, you're one of the lucky ones that just naturally go where you would go. Right. And I think when I taught, you know, I had one of the largest acting studios out here for 18 years. And when I taught, that was one of the biggest challenges I had with students is, well, what would you really do? You know, because we think we have to make so much more out of it. Mm-hmm. And really, that was my greatest challenge in Cujo. Because you want to, in a role like that, you want to really go all the way out there. And I had to always ask myself, truthfully, where are you at in this moment? Truthfully, are you acting afraid or are you exhausted from the fear that you've been, you know? That was my greatest challenge, Kane. So we don't look at you that way. And I don't want you to look at you that way.
And also, I mean, I think the greatest thing, and you've talked about this, the one thing you have that the rest of everyone else doesn't is you get the opportunity to sit and watch so many great people do their work and how they prepare. And it's like you're in an acting class. You know, you're watching somebody like Dee and how she's preparing to do it and going, all right, that's how she did it this time. What is she thinking about? Like, and because you're sort of the silent mask guy sitting back, you get like a one-on-one acting class. So
I know, but you know what, Kane? Also, I think the best actors are those that are really self-possessed and understand themselves. And as much as we talk about how incredibly big and strong and the masked killer you are, your heart is more generous and greater than so many more people I've ever met. And when you get on set, and I've watched you, even in your emotional scenes in Knife Corp, you really go there. You allow, you just, you're naturally there.
Yeah, naturally.
So, you know, mm-hmm. you're just a genuine person. And I think that's what makes the greatest actors, a really fluid, genuine, giving person.
Well, I do think that, you know, going through the burn injury certainly made me not only more compassionate to other people's situations, not just medical ones, anything, but also more open to showing emotion. Because, you know, when I was a kid, my dad didn't really like me showing any emotion. He thought it was a sign of weakness. And so that's kind of how I grew up. Hey, I can't cry or show anything like that because people will think I'm a bitch and take advantage of me. And they did, but
as a matter of fact, my bitch came.
I'm your bitch, dude.
Yes.
I'm gonna make a shirt saying that.
I'm gonna make the shirt.
I'm Dee's bitch. I love it.
I want to wear the shirt.
That's amazing. I want to fast forward a little bit to. I was lucky enough to go to a premiere of a movie that you were in. And was serious, and now clearly, like, we're all fans and you've done so much great work, but I was blown away by you in Three from Hell. And it was so fun and so different and so weird. And I really just want to know, because I feel like as a fan of Rob Zombies and a fan of just the genre in general, like, how did that connection come together? Like Sherry and Rob and you and.
Well, Rob hired me for Halloween. Rob Zombie's Halloween. And that was the beginning of a long lasting work relationship. Then I did that cartoon thing he called me for. And I said, I'll do it if I get to be the one with the biggest boobs. And then we did, what came before?
Lords of Salem.
Yes, Lords of Salem. How could I forget that? And
which was amazing then, too, by the way.
And then he called me for this. First of all, I freaking adore Rob Zombie. If you ever have a chance to work with him, he's my kind of director, because he goes, okay, what do you want to do? And then if he needs to mold it, he'll mold it, you know? And I read the script and I called him and I said, Rob, I really want to do this part, but I have to dye my hair brown and I have to look really ugly. And I think she wears glasses, you know, like horn rim glasses or something. And because I have to go against the Cupid doll soft D that everybody knows if I'm going to do this. And this is Rob. I end up talking, beat. I love it. Okay, good.
That's great.
On Lords of Salem, I was sitting in my dressing room. And you know, the first part of the film, we're all playing roles to fool Sherry. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as we give her to Satan, we become who we really are. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sitting in my room and you know how you go like something's not right. And I went, oh, fuck. And I ran to Rob and I said, Rob, I've been playing a part in the first part of this. I can't look like her. I've got to do some changes. I have to be harder now. I have to be the cunt that I really am. And he looked at me and he looks at his watch and says, you got 15 minutes.
What?
But that's how much he trusts his actors.
That's the best.
That's amazing.
Oh, isn't that freedom, you guys?
Oh.
When you get on a set and you don't hear, just move here, move there, stand there, hit your mark. All right, let's go. I mean, remember in the olden days, we'd walk on a set and we could actually rehearse and find out where we wanted to go? Mm-hmm. Not on TV anymore. Hardly mm-hmm. ever do I find that.
But well, fortunately, in a lot of the independent films that we do, I think we're given that more than, you know, studio or TV. So it is a great fun playground that we, you know, create, and yeah. It's safe since we all work together so much, and you know, we just kind of play and have a good time and play dressing.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, I think the difference of when you used to shoot only on film and you had to rehearse the hell out of everything because you didn't want to keep, you know, wasting everyone's time and reloading mags and stuff like that.
Money.
Yeah. So yeah. Things.
But I, there was something to be said for the creative process. Mm. The more, you know, for all the young directors that are listening out there, the more freedom you give your actors, mm-hmm. the more magic happens.
I'm in love with that, but there is that fine line of freedom and no vision, because I find occasionally you'll go on to something and they're like, we love you and you could do whatever you want with this part. But then you're going, but where's the bones of it? Like, where's your vision for this?
Oh, sure. I mean, a director has to bring the vision and say, this is what we're going for. And this is what we want to accomplish. But when I'm put into a box that doesn't allow me to like have that moment I had last week that came out of nowhere and almost threw me against the wall. I mean, to capture something like that on film when the actor didn't even know it was coming, that's magic.
Yeah.
So great for the other actor too, who was hopefully listening and yeah. in the moment and taking all of that, because it yeah. just betters the entire scene and both of you.
It does. And so I love working with Rob. Of course, most of my directors that I've worked with have always respected me enough and respected my input enough to allow me to voice. Like if I get a direction and it's not D, if I get a direction and it's wrong, my character goes, I can't do that. Inside me, what's going on is, I can't do that, D. I can't, it's not right. I can't do that. I would do this. I would do, it's not right. And that's what goes on inside of me. Mm, and yeah. then I have to, and most of the time when I can have time and get them to listen to me and explain it, they go, oh yeah, I get it. And then sure. because they're a lot of times they're thinking on the surface up here and we're dealing in the guts of it down here. And mm-hmm. and that's why it takes everybody working together to create all that magic.
Sure.
But you know, on ET, the DP would come in with ideas. Seriously. Wow. And some of them were awesome. On The Howling, we were the last day on the set, the last night, and it was the middle of the night. The last night we got the ranch and the generators blew. And Joe and Chris, my late husband, got together and went, and the DP went, well, what if everybody pulls their cars up and turns their headlights on? And that's how we lit that last scene.
Is that true?
It's true, and it's eerie, and it was perfect.
But amazing.
Sometimes you just got to make the magic.
Whoa.
You know?
Yeah. But I think that's like a testament of these amazing directors that you got to work with, assembling not just a great cast, but the best of the best of their team, that everybody would trust somebody to come together. Mm-hmm. But also, what kind of dipshit director nowadays would look at you and not let you do what you want? Like, you've worked with Peter Jackson. Surprised. You've worked with the best of the best directors.
One would think.
Jesus.
One would think.
I have a question that we asked our last guest, and I was kind of shocked with the answer. And don't scoff at this, D, and I know you're going to, but just shut up and answer it. When did you know you were famous?
Are you still there?
She left us.
She's gone.
She's thinking.
I think I kind of felt it after E.T. And then it went away again. I mean, I always feel like I'm famous at the cons.
Sure.
I always feel like I'm famous at Disneyland. Everybody knows me at Disneyland.
That's amazing. I'm going to break away from my fast pass.
But I'm not famous like Meryl Streep is famous.
To the horror world, you are.
Well, I would accept that, to the horror world. Yeah.
And you are. You really are. I mean, it's all perspective, too. I mean, did you ever want to be like way beyond, like to the point where you can't even walk outside your door? Like, what was your
I don't think being famous means that. I think Meryl Streep has created really beautiful boundaries between her professional life and her personal life.
And so have you. You remind me you're similar, and also roles that are iconic. And the whole world knows these roles you've played, and they're so incredibly different. So I see the two of you as very similar.
Thank you. She has a lot more Academy Awards, so.
Well, you know, that's just like.
I mean, I don't know. I've never seen them in person, so they don't really exist.
Hey, D, something popped into my mind that in learning how to be an actor as opposed to a stunt person, I've found out that I really enjoy certain things that happen on the set. And I love working with an actor or an actress that ad-libs at times. And Bill Moseley does that a lot.
Yeah.
From take to take sometimes. He'll say something completely different in from one take to the next take of the exact same scene. And I love that, because then my response is never going to seem rehearsed, because I didn't even know what he was going to say. So the point being, do you have any things that pop into your mind from all of these iconic films that you've done where there's a scene where someone may have done that and then.
Oh my God, look at the scene from Lords of Salem. Was it Lords of Salem? No, from Halloween with Scout and I. So we had a written scene, and everybody came in and did the written scene. And then Rob said, okay, everybody bring in their best shit. And we were fucking bagels with our fingers, which is still in the picture. I mean, we were all over the place. And then when I did Three from Hell, they asked me to come in at the last minute one afternoon, and I rushed over there, and he said, okay, we're going to pick this up. And Rob does that a lot. He'll watch what he has, and then he'll go, oh, I need to get more of that or get an insert here. So I ran in, ran to this head. He said, okay, this has happened and that's happened. And you come in and you see, you know, that baby has dismembered all these women that you thought were going to kill her and all this stuff. Okay, let's roll it. And I said, Rob, just wait a minute. And I stood there and I heard Charles Conrad go, let go of all your ideas. And then I had it. Because your mind would tell you, oh, this is horrifying. This is, oh, God, I have to. But what happened to me when I let go of that idea was how much I wanted to fuck her.
Yes.
And how much that turned me on. Oh. Right. And we got finished and Rob said, okay, Kenny. He said, God, I love how sick your mind is.
And you know what? So did everyone. I sat at that premiere, me and Foray, and we were like, holy shit, D. Holy shit. Like it, and the crowd there that night, guys, was just crazy for her. It because of that reaction. Like it's true. Like, I mean, like, yeah, you play a warden-ish kind of, you know, prison.
Ugly, yeah.
Whatever. But when you add that, those layers makes it something, it's something that I was like, oh, that's the part I want to play. God damn it. Like, that's what it makes you an actor feel when you watch that kind of stuff and you, well, you do it.
Thank you. You know, I love hiding behind characters. I would rather play a great character role anytime than a leading lady.
Sure.
Role. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a part like Cujo, where you get to mesh both of them together.
Well, yeah, because, right? I mean, your starring character is the name of the movie rather than, even though you are your hero, right? Like, it's a horror film. Like, who's really the star, the monster or the final girl?
So yeah. Much more fun to be the character.
But speaking of characters, here's a bunch of titles, and you can tell me what all of them have in common.
Oh, I'm so bad at this shit. All right.
Stay Home, Death House, Best of the Best 3, Alligator 2, Zombie Killers, Day 14, Abominable, Ouija House, Death House, Happy in the Valley.
Who the fuck knows? I don't have a clue what's all
that. Me, Felissa, and Kane have all done with you.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yes.
Yep. Kane was Stay Home, Death House, as well as Felissa and me, Death House, Best of the Best 3 and Alligator 2. Felissa had Zombie Killers and our short, Day 14. And then I did Abominable, Happy in the Valley, at Ouija House, which I didn't even know because I've never watched it. Ouija House and Day 14.
How cool is that, huh, guys?
That's so cool.
It's
kind of fun.
In Alligator 2, I was one of the gator hunters that got killed by the alligator.
Oh my God, I had no idea, King.
Trying to remember my name.
I mean, you know, I watched it once and that was enough.
I actually did all the Best of the Best movies too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that little part that I had in Best of the Best. She was who I envisioned my great great grandmother looking like, living in that trailer, you know, slapping the shit out of that kid.
Great.
See, we had fun on Zombie Killers. Gabrielle, your daughter, is spectacular in that movie.
Oh,
I mean,
thank you.
She's so great in it. And I remember feeling like you, Kane, so intimidated. We watched the film at your house, but we didn't know each other that well. And I am, you know, wearing a wig and very different
terrific
in that movie.
What are you talking about? intimidated.
Very intimidated. Oh, and I remember you asking,
you go in and out of characters like people go in and out of doors. Come on.
Okay. We could have thought of a lot of other analogies for you too, Felissa.
Yes.
What?
All right, now, be nice.
We're never nice on this show to each other, just our guests.
I see.
It's Casualty Friday.
Yeah. No, and then we, Abominable, which was a like kind of a early who's who of horror people,
yeah.
Like you, I believe it was you and Rex Lynn at the beginning. And it was Ryan Schifrin, Lalo Schifrin's son. It was like his first big horror film. I play one of the girls who gets a cabin and blah, blah, blah. And it's sort of like Rear Window meets Bigfoot. And it's really well done, cool movie.
It is well done.
And, but I found out I was pregnant with Mia while I was on that film. And I'm supposed to do this wacky stunt where I'm pulled after, you know, taking a shower naturally, out of a window backwards by Bigfoot. And they had this whole rig. And I found out I was pregnant the day before. And I go to the stunt guys. I'm like, hey, shh, but would this be safe if somebody was like pregnant? And they just kind of looked at me like Dee's face right now was like, how pregnant? And I was like, I don't know, pretty new. And like, all of a sudden he made a couple calls, called me back. He's like, well, if you're not showing, it's probably fine. All right. And yeah, and obviously, thank God.
Welcome to the life of an actor, huh?
But
I know.
Afraid to lose.
I was up for a really, really big series. And everybody, Dee's a shoo-in. And I had flown back to see my mom and got the call that I didn't get it. And I think I had about 4 scotch on the rocks. And when I got back, I found out I was pregnant. Well, I was freaked out that I had hurt that baby with those 4 scotches. You know, but again, I
think we've all had that
moment.
I had a
lot of history with alcohol and the bad stuff it did, so.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had that moment before finding out I was pregnant with Mia. I think I even asked my doctor, I'm like, so would a couple drinks have hurt the baby? And he's like, no. I'm like, what about a couple dozen drinks? Would that have hurt the baby? I think the only good pregnant lady was Felissa, because she was like, I remember like you were just big and perfect and didn't do anything.
No, I was drinking with you before I even knew I was pregnant with Bianca. I was telling you to rub on my belly. You had just had Mia. And I was saying, rub on my belly. I want to be pregnant. And
but you didn't know.
Well,
you know, it happens.
You know, once I was pregnant, I never had a drink. I was perfect. I did everything because, you know, I had tried for 6 years. To get pregnant with Gab. She jokes all the time. She says, yeah, there were like thousands of souls up there, Mom. And finally I said, all right, fuck it, I'll go. She's not going to give up.
That's great. That's great. Oh, we're going to have to wrap it up in a second, but I did have one last question. And it's, if there was to be a remake of one of your films, I know everyone scoffs at like remakes, whatnot, but like, what would be the one that you would think it could be done and could be done justice, maybe because of like more modern effects, different timing, different director, different
actors? Well, I think probably a lot of the low budget things that I've done, but none of my major films. They've called and said, would you do another Cujo? I said, are you fucking out of your mind? You know, first of all, it'd be CGI. And second of all, I can't be any better than I was in that movie. I really stand by that. I wouldn't know what else to do.
What about?
I don't even know how to answer that, you know, because first of all, I can hardly even watch an old movie 2 times. Once I've been there, done that. And then that's why I hate a lot of takes. You know, I'm the best on the first or second or third take. You know, if you're going to do 12 takes or 15 takes, I mean, I can do it, but it's laborious for me.
It's exhausting. Yeah.
Well, it's exhausting. And the way I work, it's not as exciting because the magic hits you when you don't know it's coming. And after you've done it 15 times, you kind of tend to do it the same way.
It wanes, yeah. And you step on prepared. That's the thing. You're ready to jump in. And the energy is up.
Yeah.
I think it wanes. Like, you can't, I mean, sustaining that kind of, you know, lightning is not as difficult, I feel.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel the same way.
It is our job, but it's challenging.
I've always talked about stunts in films where I'll be watching something with someone who's not in the business, and you'll see a stunt, and I'll just, for the fun of it, I'll ask them, or especially if it was one that I did, I said, do you think you could have done that? Because they're not, you know, a stunt person or an actor. Do you think you could have performed that? And they'll say, oh yeah, I think I could have. And then I'll say, could you have done it 12 times? Because sometimes, just like with acting, we have to do a stunt over and over and over. And that's when it gets dangerous, when you've done the same stunt 10 times already and they're still not happy with the coverage they've gotten. So you have to do it again. So I can identify kind of similarly with that kind of thing with multiple takes.
Well, it's also just frustrating because you usually know that it's not for any anything that you've done incorrectly. It's now camera and focus and they did it late part or some other
audio
that's not prepared.
Boom's right. In the shot.
And so you're like, what the hell? I showed up.
Or there's 12 writer producers and all of them have different ideas.
For sure, for sure.
That's my favorite.
Dee, tell us what you have coming up that you want to promote or tell us about before you have to go.
Oh, dear Lord. Well, I've got this TV show that airs in 2 weeks, but check my social media on
that. What was the title again? I forgot.
Yeah, love you, King. And I've got 13 Fanboy coming out when and if things ever come out again. I've got Await the Dawn coming out, which I also did with Gabrielle. And there's two other little films that right now escape me. And, you know, in my healing work, I'm doing a whole webinar on channeling on February 23rd.
And can people sign up for that? Can people pay? Can people pay and attend?
Oh, yeah.
How does it work?
You just go to my website, iamdwallace.com. And that's also, you can find a link to my free call-in radio show. Every Sunday, you can call in and ask the channel questions about money or relationships or sex. There's nothing off limits.
Kane, you could go and ask why we all dislike you so much. Maybe the universe will give the answer.
You know I love you. No, no, no.
Don't all pretend to be nice to Kane just because Dee's here.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't make it any different than usual.
Yeah, this is weird.
Me? I'm the hugger of the group. I love y'all.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for being here. We know that
we love you, Dee. Thank you.
Oh, this was so much fun to be with you guys. I love you.
We miss you.
Like, honestly.
Yeah, we have to get together when all this is over and let's get together. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And do a movie and do some good work and play.
And have fun.
Anytime you want to come on to Casualty Friday, we are here. And we will bump any guest for you.
Oh, I'm not going to tell him that. All right, guys.
We love you.
Stay safe. Stay well.
You too. Stay on. Bye, Dee. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is an amazing guest.
She is the best.
And
she's amazing.
I'm just so happy that we, as Casualty Friday, can bring guests like this to our watchers. Like, she's, I mean, seriously, I really mean it when I say, like, a filmography that.
Oh, she transcends. She is on the same level to me as Meryl Streep.
Absolutely.
So are we doing another one, just the three of us?
We're still on.
Yes. Are we? No, I mean the next time. Tell our Casualty Friday listeners.
I believe that we're doing another episode with just us, but we also have another guest that I think we can announce if we want to. We're going to have the awesome Amanda Wiss from Nightmare on Elm Street fame, and she has some cool stuff to tell us about. I mean, if we want to talk about some other future guests, I believe Felissa has another guest announcement.
A friend of ours who we did Victor Crowley with, Dave Sheridan.
Dave Sheridan is going to be on. So we have a really cool lineup of Casualty Friday fans and friends and favorites, and as well as more of our just normal stuff. But that was awesome. I am
amazing. She's, you know, she's so ethereal. She's so special and beautiful. I've spent a lot of time with her. Just, you know, I feel very much in line with her values and her thoughts. And I feel very close to Gabrielle, her daughter. So this was a treat. Thank you so much to everybody for listening. We love Casualty Friday. We hope you do as well.
Yes, tell your friends about it. Please, please listen to it on iTunes or Spotify or wherever else that you get your podcasting stuff. Every other week, we'll be releasing our stuff on YouTube as well, so you can watch the video content. But we really, really want you to listen to our podcast when you drive to work, when you drive to your girlfriend's house, when you drive to graveyards, whatever.
To Starbucks.
Casualty Friday. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Bye. There you go. Watch your back.